Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to Danielle Jouret. Danielle was raised on Motown Records and is a songwriter and vocal powerhouse born to bring soul to the forefront of today's pop music. With precise vocal runs, a 3.5-octave range, and not a drop of auto-tune, her voice is one in a million. With her music featured in CBS's Love Island, US and UK in 2021, her music has reached new heights, charting the top 100 in the USA with multiple songs on adult contemporary radio. She has also charted in the top 100 pop charts around the country on Shazam, Spotify, and iTunes, while being featured on American Songwriter magazine, the Chicago Tribune, ABC 7 Windy City Live, Apple Music's UK Rising, Sirius XM Radio, and Mahogany Sessions London. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Danielle Jouret. Danielle, where do we find you in the world? What's happening in your life and how are you doing?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm based in Chicago right now, and I really love being here. It's especially my producer that I write all of my music with lives here. So I'm super fortunate where I can just go and meet with him every single week and we can work together. And I'm currently working on something. I usually, people joke and they always say when I drop my yearly single. So this year, I think I'm going to drop one more song before the end of the year. So that's what I'm currently working on.
Did you always live in Chicago or did you only recently move there?
Yeah, so I grew up in, or was born rather, in the suburbs of Chicago. And then I was raised in Tampa, Florida. So I lived in Florida. And then we just recently, meaning like 10 years ago, moved back because a lot of my family is here.
But now that's a bit of a contradiction in weather. Like, isn't Chicago like sort of freezing sometimes and Florida is like always hot?
Yeah, it was there was just, they're so like incomparable, like you can't there's really no way to like describe it. It truly they don't even compare, really. It's like night and day. Yeah, it was definitely different for sure.
Now, let's take it back, all the way back to your or start of your singing career. When did you start singing or realize that this is a path that you wanted to take? Let's start in the beginning of your journey.
Sure. So my father, I grew up with him in the industry, and he did live sound for Charlie Daniels and Bonnie Raitt.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And so I grew up with him in the industry. So I really didn't know anything other than us having a studio in our home and my dad on the road. And I really don't think I would be in the industry if it wasn't for my father. My father, I just kind of grew up only knowing and seeing the music industry and just a part of it. And so I was always singing when I was really, really young, but didn't think much of it. I would like audition for Disney when I was like 5 or 6, of course, didn't place anything because it took me a really long time. I really didn't like this, how I sounded and how I was singing. And I didn't really like the music I was writing. And I think it just took years and years of just like hard work and practice in order to, you know, finally like be comfortable with my sound. So it's really funny when people are saying that like they can't be singers or, you know, that they don't like the way that they sound when they first start, because I truly think it's just all about growth and persistence.
What didn't you like about your sound, and what made you realize that, or what changed your perception around it? I know you said it was a practice and that, but was there a moment it was like, oh, okay? Because often when we look at ourselves in the mirror, generally people, let's speak of other people, when people look at themselves in the mirror, they always look at the things that they perceive are wrong with them. So when you were listening to your voice, when you were singing? Was it a perception of hearing things that you thought were wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I was pitchy. I had zero confidence. I remember like walking up to the stage for, you know, either like open mic nights or, you know, like talent shows for like the school I was going to. And I would just really be so doubtful. And it took a really long time for me to own my craft. And really, truly, I always joke about it, but just years of beating myself up about pitch and stage performance and presence and everything. I truly think it took me like 15 years just to finally right now be comfortable and talk to a large audience and just command a stage, but do it in a way of with like while of like being humble and just trying to, it's like working hard to be effortless, which is so funny to say, but that's like how it kind of feels sometimes in this industry.
A few things. So this thought just came to my mind before, so I want to share it to you and the audience. So I remember when I was doing my Journey accreditation course, for those guys who don't know what Journey work is, Google it. It's amazing. www.journey.com. Just side note. But when I was doing my Journey course, Brandon Bays, the developer of Journey, Brandon is a woman. She said that when just putting a picture of you like in the sea, struggling for that life, you know, that life thing. And the more you struggle, the more you struggle, the more you struggle, the more you push it away. And the minute you stop struggling and you just calm into it, that life thing comes to you. So it's that whole element of efforting, of trying and trying and trying and over trying and then pushing it away. And then the minute you stop trying, it just, everything falls into place.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, for the longest time, and I still do, I overthink everything. And
sorry to interrupt. You are my, no. I was just messaging one of my collaborators saying, it's my overactive mind again.
Yes, I know. And, you know, I think in any form of being a creative, I think that we just overanalyze, beat ourselves up and overthink everything. And in all actuality, my manager said this to me, he goes, you're beating yourself up and you're not realizing that all these people want is content from you. And that made me think, because I'm constantly thinking about what the next move is and over strategizing, you know, what I should do, when really all people want is just content, but not too much content, you know, so that then I like overthink that. it's very interesting. But I used to really plan out my singles so strategically that like I had to make sure that the sound like made sense from one single after another. And then I realized I love the fact that like just recently I just dropped the song Sober and it sounds nothing like I did before. And I don't care. It was how I felt.
Yes.
And I realized that like when you don't care and you're just putting out your true emotions, like that it shouldn't really matter anymore. Yes.
And do you actually think maybe that by overthinking and over strategizing and over analyzing, it was in a sense a form of procrastination?
No. I think it was me trying to make sure that everything is perfect. And yeah, it's like almost the opposite. But the reason why I say that also is because I think as an independent artist, I'm overanalyzing everything because I'm trying, I have this goal of, you know, signing with a publishing company and meeting all these people. And I never want there to be any hesitation on anyone questioning who I am as an artist or what my goal is or my sound.
Yeah.
So I always overanalyze everything. So it makes sure like that it, you know, I really, really have this perfect just collaboration and work of art that people won't question me as an artist. And you always will. And that's the thing of like the circle of overanalyzing is you're always going to get that person that's like, you have no idea what you're doing and whatever. So it's like, just don't even worry or hesitate anymore about that and just put out what you love.
So when you and I get into the space, which yeah. for me is quite, it's much less than it used to be, to be yeah. honest. But when we get into space, we must each email each other, text each other and say, hey, calm your mind. And we send each other something to calm each other's mind. Because we,
yes, exactly.
We're so equal in that way that by showing the mirror of each other will help us, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And I think, you know, just really, you know, not getting in your own way almost too. Yeah. So it's hard. It's so much easier said than done. And yeah. it'll probably take me. And I want to get in that really great frame of mind, you know, where it's like someone just later in life when they don't care what anyone thinks about them, what, you know, or they're just very confident and calm in the world and in themselves and just like write what they want to write and do what they want to do. I like to use John Mayer as an example of that because that yeah. guy just, you know, is a great lyricist and musician and just doesn't care what anyone has to say or think about him.
Speaking of your creative process, what is that? Yeah. I know it's overanalyzed and it's overthought.
Yeah, you got it.
But besides that, when you create a 3 to 4 minute song out of nothing, how yeah. does that process, what is that process? How does it come to be? Is it different every time? What influences your words and your lyrics? All of those questions in one.
Yeah. So it really varies, but my process, the first and foremost is if I don't believe that something does, like if something doesn't need to be said, I don't write about it. I only will write if I feel so inclined to, and only if it's this feeling that I don't believe is oversaid and overstated. And I feel like I have a space or a place and I need to let it out and let it be. And I say that because every time I try to overwrite or like pick a topic and just really try to write about mm-hmm. it, I never succeed because it feels forced. Yeah. So that's like the number one thing is I always like, you know, I'm normally writing when I'm very like sad or aggravated or angry. Notice how it's never happy in this lineup. One day I'll write a happy song, just not anytime soon. I don't know what it is, but anyway, that's for a different time. So, you know, I just always have to write from this emotion. And then yes. The last couple of times from the songs I've written, they come very quickly. Sometimes I don't have any music or anything with them. An entire like melody and all the lyrics just come to mind and I'll just write it on a page and then bring it to my producer. His name is Matt LeGrand. And he's also my best friend. And so Matt, I'll come to Matt and I'll be like, I have all of this. And then he'll, you know, we'll work it out. And I have to say, I'm going to knock on wood here because I hope I don't jinx myself, but I've done this enough where I hopefully won't, I don't know. But every time I work with Matt and every single song I have currently, we've always written in about 2 hours or less.
Okay.
And I'm so proud of that. And so it's, I always am able to just, you know, start writing and walk out of the room in one day and just have a great body of work that I, you know, I'm proud of. So it, and then the work comes in the next couple, you know, months of, you know, tweaking everything and mixing and mastering and all of that. But yeah, my process really is just writing what I think needs to be written. And a lot of it just comes to me. But I like to call myself a top liner, which in the pop industry is just someone that, you know, comes up with the melodies and comes up with them, you know, hopefully like quickly. So okay. That's really, you know, my bread and butter, if you will. I love writing pop melodies and usually the melody is probably the first thing that comes first. I write the choruses first. I do that on purpose because if I don't have a catchy chorus, I feel like I've failed as a writer. I like to, you know, have something that people can sing along with by the yeah. next time that the chorus comes along. So yeah, that's the long-winded answer to your question.
But, okay. So you've got a routine of doing it, which works for you, which is brilliant. And
yeah.
no, Let's not manifest that energetically. Moving forward, it will always be working 2 hours. There won't be hitches along the way. So the conscious communication moving forward, 2 hours, track each time he comes through. Let's put it out there to the universe.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Now, you said it's taken you a while to command the stage. Are you much more comfortable now? Do you enjoy performing more now live than previously? And is it because you're not as hard on yourself as you were before, or you're letting things go? And tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, funny enough, I'm probably harder on myself now than ever. I don't think that'll ever change. Mm-hmm. I'm my worst critic by far. So it's really funny, and I won't get into this, but it's funny because sometimes, you know, artists, and we know we're all going to get hate comments. And it's really funny because we're so critical of ourselves. No hate comment could possibly say anything worse than we've all said about ourselves.
Absolutely.
So I always think about that. So it's like, we're very, critical anyway. So in that retrospect, I think it'll always be that way. Sometimes it comes in handy and sometimes it doesn't. But as far as commanding the space and being, that artist on stage, I'm an entirely different person than I was like even 5 or 6 years ago. It's very, it's honestly really crazy to me. I'm just like an entirely different person. And then I started kind of learning my space of just, I'll get up there and I don't pre-plan anything. And I just kind of like have fun with the audience and try to like make jokes and make light of everything. And it just make it a very like fun and exciting space. And before every show, I always go out and I tell the audience to let everything go and forget about, anything that has happened before this show, and just come to have a good time and come to, just forget about anything negative or that they're worrying about. And I just want to create this really happy and or calm or soothing and just relaxing place of just enjoying music and having a good time. And I don't know, I try to really just do that with the audience, is just make everybody feel comfortable. And I like to just make it seem like, we're hanging out essentially. Yes. And it's just like a one-on-one conversation with me, and the audience. And that's just kind of really, I've totally just changed my way of thinking about how to, work with people on the stage. But truly, I used to be absolutely terrified. But I don't think like younger me would recognize me today on a stage. And also, I just really like to crack jokes and laugh and have a really good time, because a lot of my songs are very strong, like ballads that are very sad and emotional. So I do like to break that up, because I don't want people just sitting there in the audience crying and sad the entire time, because it very could, and very well could be, that kind of, vibe with the music I write. And I get that. So I like the juxtaposition between, having people laugh with me and just writing just the most depressing music you've ever heard in your entire life.
So a few things to comment on. So I love that you say that the younger you wouldn't recognize the present day you. It should be like that for everyone, because as we move forward in life, we have aha moments, we learn, we should be, all those tough times, we should be learning the lessons from them to move forward onto the next path into our journey of life. So I'm hoping that everyone listening and everyone in the world shouldn't recognize the young themselves. Hopefully I'm the same. Frustrates me. I, as a recipient of being in concerts, I'm always a person in front, and I love going without any expectations of what songs are going to be played. Because I find, frustrates me is I find the people around me, and often I go to concerts by myself because my friends think I'm strange, which is okay, because they don't want to be right in front. They don't want to be there the whole day waiting. But I find the people around me like, oh, They've already Googled the stage set out. They've already Googled the set list. They already know what the artist is going to be wearing, what, where, how, whatever. And I just without having done any of that, just being in the moment. And often I'll hear people say, you know, these are the people that have not Googled the set list. They'll be like, oh, I hope they're going to sing this song. I hope they're going to sing that song. I hope they're going to sing that song. Instead of being in the moment and just enjoying the song that's being sung. And then I'll hear at the end, oh, they didn't like the show. It wasn't such a great song because they had expectations of what should happen. And instead of just being there and being present in the moment.
Yeah, I can, you know, I say that about like, about really anything. I think, you know, it's like that, you know, we're now used to that cliche saying of like expectation is the root of all heartache. But it is. And I love that. Thank you on the artist side as being someone that comes without expectation, but just, you know, waits and sits in the front row. I think that people don't realize, you know, those are usually people that have been waiting there all day and get there early. And, you know, thank you for doing that for whomever like you're seeing, you know, that's such dedication. And I think that like, that's a part of the artistry that like, we don't even think about is, you know, those people that, you know, have driven hours and everything. And that's just, you can't comprehend that as an artist. That's, you know, it's crazy to think of that.
You know what frustrates me even more is the people around me or have been waiting all day. We are right in front. You as the artist are as close to me as 10 feet away. And yet everyone, except me, everyone else around me have got their cell phones out trying to get the perfect picture or perfect photo or perfect video. And it just, it's like, put your phones down, experience the moment and enjoy it and just be there presently. You know, it's, I don't know from your side, if what your thoughts of seeing all these cell phones trying to get the perfect image, perfect picture, when the people are right in front of you and just experiencing it away from that technology. What are your thoughts around that?
Totally. It's really hard because I have like a mixed feeling about it.
Okay.
So I'm like on the technology side and like on the, you know, them putting their phones out. I think I've seen it so many times. I try to think of it as like a compliment in a way. And the reason why I say that is like someone likes it so much that they want it as like a keepsake for later on their phone, you know, and they're videoing it and, you know, someone cares enough to want it, you know, on their phone or are that enthusiastic about it. So it's kind of like how I try to see that in the sense and just in that sense. But I will say for an entire show, for someone to just do that the entire time, it's like you might as well just like go and watch like the YouTube videos at that point, you know?
Exactly. Put it away.
Yeah, exactly. I think like, you know, if you had a song you had been, you know, excited for and loved, it's like by all means, but yeah, for an entire set, I don't really get it. It is really about the experience and you know, being there. And, you know, it's like, it's the differentiation between them sitting in their car, listening to a CD of the artist rather than being there in person. So it's like, you finally got that opportunity to be with that artist and be in that, you know, present space in person to just be present. But, it's really interesting, but I think that feeling of, you know, putting your phone away and being present doesn't, with some people, I don't even think that that registers. I don't think that that is something that they even think about. It's just that it's just a norm. And not to get too deep into it, but it's the same. I think it's the same reason why people are on their phones during movies now. And, you know,
I shout at them.
Yeah, right. But you know, exactly, absolutely. But I think it's just, you know, I don't know. It's like a norm, and I think of the same thing of, I don't know too many people, unless they're like on the artist side, that listen to an album all the way through anymore without distractions. Like people that just like to listen to an album to listen to an album.
So and on that point, on that point, way back. It was the physical, the CD, the vinyl, the cassettes. Those, I'm so excited, are making a comeback.
Yes.
I mean, last year, CDs had for the first time in 21 years, increase of sales. I love CDs. I love the booklet. I love the aesthetic of holding something. But many people these days are listening to the music on the digital platforms. What are your thoughts around that and the way people consume music now compared to 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago?
Yeah, I truly have the same feeling, just like the phone. So it's like both sides. And I totally love and agree with you in the sense of, you know, as an artist, you know, I've worked so hard on the aesthetic and about putting things together. So that vinyl cover, the photos, the booklet, the whatever the artist decides to put in that, it's just, it's all an art form and something that was planned out and made for the listeners. So the fact that, you know, sales are decreasing and it's all digital, it's just kind of like, that was like an additional piece of art that I feel like is a missed opportunity of people going out to the store and seeing and you know, getting that and, you know, having a physical copy of, you know, this album and this body of work that's an art piece. And you know, that's a shame. And then on the other side, I do like the digital platform because then anyone has access to it at any time. And like, as long as they have like their phone with them or computer. So I do like, you know, that aspect of it. And then on a music business aspect, I wish that, you know, more people would buy CDs and vinyl because people don't realize, I mean, it's very nice, you know, when people, you know, listen to us digitally, but we like one play is 0.0015 cents every single time that they play us. So, I mean, a lot of, you know, ways how artists stay alive is touring and selling merch and their music. So the digital platform has definitely, you know, taken away from, you know, artists, you know, potentially making a living from, you know, selling their vinyl and selling their CDs. Because, I mean, streaming really doesn't pay anything at all. And I know that, you know, there's so many like songwriters, you know, fighting for their rights every single day to just get paid a normal wage, you know, because this is a job. And I won't get into all of that. Yeah, yeah. But I really do see, you know, like both sides and the accessibility for people. But also, you know, it is the vinyl and the CD and having that booklet. It's an art form and it's a piece of art. And yeah, I really wish that more CDs. And I'm so glad vinyl, like you said, is making a comeback.
Yeah. But they're all about, you know, the thing is for me is that you guys work hard. I mean, we sit here and see the end result. But that process of creating that 3-minute song, the 3-minute video, there's a whole process around that. And I feel for me, when I buy the CD, it's an energy exchange of saying, thank you for your hard work. And this is my appreciation for your hard work. And the digital platforms have diminished that. And the consumers, I feel, are now taking advantage of it and not recognizing the hard work that you guys do because it's easily accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's anytime that you bring someone with just strictly a business mindset with the only objective is to make money. It's and then bring them into, you know, a creative industry. It's just always going to be like that. You know, I just kind of like, it's just how I feel is there's just, I like being, you know, on the artist, but also the business side. Yep. But yeah, no, it's very, it's very, very interesting. And it's a very interesting point. And you just really, as the artist, have to see the best of both sides, because if you don't, you'll just, it just be, it'll be another thing to be frustrated about.
Exactly. I'm going to put you on the spot right now. I love playing this game. Sure. And not overthought. No, saying that specifically.
Yeah.
Say
thank you.
In inverted commas, favorite, but it's not favorite. Your top 5 songs by other artists.
Oh man. I think so. Let's see. This will just be for like right now. It's really
yes,
fun.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like,
it's in this
time,
moment,
right?
In this time. Yeah, because if I ask this you in an hour or tomorrow or next week, it'll be different. So totally understand.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to go with Detour by Maren Morris. I love Maren Morris. If you don't know who she is,
an
incredible songwriter.
Yeah.
And then I've been listening to a lot. Do you know Leon Bridges or no?
Yes.
Yes, I love, I'm going to say River by Leon Bridges. I love that song and I love him. Scarlet by Holly Humberstone.
Okay.
I love, she's out of the UK. She's incredible.
Two more.
Yes, let's see. I'm going to say Paris by the 1975.
Okay.
And I'll throw in some John Mayer. Let's do Stop This Train. I love that song.
I was wondering if you was going to add him in.
Yeah, of course, right? That's always the, you know, it's either him or Mark Ronson. I got to alternate between the two. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Have you been to South Africa at all?
I have not, no. That would be so, so wonderful.
As a final message, the podcast is listened to throughout the world, South Africa, throughout the world. What's a final message that you'd like to give to our listening audience?
I think just to live every single day in the moment. And I've been trying to do that. So it's so much easier said than done.
Yep.
But I think that I just really want to leave that upon everybody, is just to really live every single day and just feel be more present.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's super important. We're always worried about what's next on our calendar or an event. And as we should be, in moderation, but I think it's by truly just like enjoying and being in the moment that you are right now, because you're not going to have that moment again. And perhaps that's cheesy, but sometimes the cheesiest things like are just, you know, matter of fact and just real. So, yeah, I think being present, and I need to work on that myself. So
it's reminded myself, me as well. So dropping that mic to the listening audience, be present in the moment. This is Celeb Savant signing out with Danielle Jure.